tell me again about how you got your parents out.
My parents were on the waiting list for a number on the quota. And all one needed to have that number processed and be called before the American Consul in Vienna was an affidavit of support, which was a statement of an American citizen that he would vouch for the immigrant not to ever become a burden to the United States. I heard by rumors that there was a man in New York who would give such affidavits even to strangers. On one of my afternoons off, on one of the Thursdays, I took off for New York and went to the building. The man was a Mr. Harry Sherman, was founder and director of the Book of the Month Club. That's why you see so many Book of the Month books on our shelves here. I went to the building in which his company was located, went into the lobby to the pay station and called the office up and was connected with him personally and introduced myself and told him that he didn't know me, but would he kindly, that I am a refugee from Vienna, would he kindly give me 5 minutes of his time to listen to me? He said, where are you located? I said, downstairs. He said, come right up. I did, and I supplied him with a copy for each, my husband's and my own, curriculum vitae, which describes our education, our background, and our quote, capabilities, and he just hardly took a look, and I asked him would he be good enough to give an affidavit of support to my parents, and they certainly would never be a burden to him while we were here. He didn't say a word. He picked up the phone and said, Sam, I'm sending a Mrs. Albert down. Make out the affidavits of support for her. Now, I was encouraged by this. I thanked him profusely, and I was encouraged to ask for more. You know, you were in a desperate situation, and you forgot all about do's and don'ts. I had a cousin who had married an invalid after World War I. He had lost his right arm for the Kaiser. He lived in Vienna and had a boy about 6 years old, and they pleaded desperately for an affidavit of support. I think by that time they had fled to Belgium already, illegally. And he was kind enough and gave me an affidavit for them too. Unfortunately, they didn't make it. Hitler invaded Belgium and they fled to France, were pursued there and ended in the concentration camp of Gurs, G-U-R-S, and perished there.
Oh, what a shame.
I'll never forget Mr. Sherman and his kindness.
Did he help get at your husband's parents and your brother-in-law and sister-in-law?
No, we didn't. By that time, through some research, my parents-in-law found they had a relative in Philadelphia, a doctor, I think Dr. Bernard Cohn was his last name for sure, who was a pediatrician where we should try. So we went to Philadelphia, my husband and I, and pleaded with him. I smile because I remember I brought gifts wherever I went. I brought gifts out of what I had saved. The mother of one of my students whom I had saved through school had hand crocheted a terrific big tablecloth, and I took that along and gave it to Mrs. Cohn. Well, anyway, they agreed to write the affidavit of support for my husband's parents. And that's how, after a long story, that's a story in itself if you want it, we got the parents.
My husband's parents. Well, tell us about it now.
My husband's parents were born in Czechoslovakia, where the quota was even smaller than the German, the Austrian quota. They were born in what was called Sudetenland. They waited and waited and waited. Finally, after many pleas by my parents-in-law, who thought we could speed the process up, but we couldn't. We had no way. We didn't have a brother who was a congressman or anything like that. And you know to whom I refer. Finally, my husband's father cabled that on so-and-so on that day, they were invited to the examination at the American consulate. 2 days later, we got a desperate cable. It was at the end of November that they were refused the visa without any reason, without giving them any reason. We were desperate. There was nothing we could do. I heard that before Christmas, Mrs. Eleanor Roosevelt did many deeds of special charity. My husband and I composed a telegram of 190 words and sent it to Mrs. Roosevelt, pleading with her to find out what the reason was for the refusal. Would she please see us or give us an interview so we could explain in detail? Paid the return telegram, got a telegram back saying, Mr. Harrison will see you any time of your convenience. Mr. Harrison was the Commissioner of Immigration for the United States of America. Whereupon Mrs. Cooper gave me a day off. My husband had just started and finally found a job. So, and he correctly said that I was the better talker in the family. I went to Washington, D.C. with telegram, Mrs. Roosevelt's telegram in hand, and was told to wait in office number so-and-so. There was my file. And I waited there, and I was taken in, and the officer introduced himself, and I never forget, Mr. Monroe, America for Americans. And I found the greatest anti-Semite sitting there. My plea that I have come, would he accept the money for a cable to send to the consul in Vienna to give and return paid to give the reason for refusal? He said, if the consul refuses, that's his business. There's nothing we can do about it. He must have his reasons. And I pleaded with him that I wanted to know the reasons. He wouldn't. The phone rang while I was there. He picks up the phone and he listens and he said, I swear to God, this is the truth. He said, I know. After 4 weeks, they open up a business and they make money more than we people do. And I said it once more, and he got up and opened the door. I came out in the hall, and I cried. A guard was walking the hall, and he patted me on the shoulder, and he says, now, lady, what are you? I said, I want to see Mr. Harrison. It's life or death. I have to see Mr. Harrison. So he said, Mr. Harrison is that away in that office, and turned the other way as if he hadn't seen me. You know, a man of the people. And I went in. Of course, I didn't have an appointment with Mr. Harrison, and I was stopped right at the receptionist's desk. I told her, I've got to see him. And I showed her the telegram. She said, but Mr. Monroe took care of your case. I said, he didn't. And I stay here. She said, he might not be able to see you today. It may be tomorrow or the day after. I said, that was fine. I was going to sleep on a park bench. I didn't have the money. But I was going to stay here. I sat for 3 hours in the waiting room. In the meantime, after about 2 hours, I see Mr. Monroe with a file under his arm march into Mr. Harrison's office. When my turn finally came to Mr. Harrison, I told him my story, and he said, why didn't Mr. Monroe grant your wish? I said, I don't know, but he said to me, he opened the door and threw me out. Mr. Harrison said, if he did this, Mrs. Abbott, I apologize for the department. He let me pay for the cable and the return. He couldn't promise me anything, but he would try. That was in the middle of December. By the end of February, I got a telegram from Mr. Harrison, book boat tickets for March or April. Would you imagine? Later on, I found out that the consul in Vienna was a crook. There were Jews who had money, and he took their number and had to throw somebody out. Since my parents-in-law didn't know that, I don't know if they could have scraped together the money that he wanted. But they went astray. So I still have Mrs. Roosevelt. I have the copy of our telegram and Mrs. Roosevelt's answer. I have an attic full of papers.
Your brother-in-law and sister-in-law, how did they get out?
My sister-in-law is Gentile. My brother-in-law was in the same profession that my husband was. They were a famed brother team in their field. I have newspaper clippings about that, too. After we were somewhat established here, was 41, he went illegally across the border into, traveled to Germany, and illegally slipped the border into Belgium. Was aware of the situation that the Belgian police would pick him up. If he didn't have cash to show, he would be shipped right back to Germany. That was Belgium. So we promised him, we swore, that the minute he sent a telegram that he had slipped across, that we'd cable him money. And he succeeded on his third try. He had to pay a terrific amount of money by those smugglers. Got into Belgium, and we cabled him $200, so he was secured from police, from being expelled. And his wife, being a Gentile, had a regular passport and traveled to join him, which we personally appreciated it no end. She left all her family, her father, her mother, her brother, everything she was educated for, she'd grown up behind, to join her Jewish husband. She's been a wonderful wife. She's still living in Washington. My brother-in-law, unfortunately, is there too. But she could go there illegally, and they managed, and we helped them get an affidavit of support. You know, I can't even remember who it was. Oh, I think it was my husband's employer who supplied the affidavit of support. And they came here in 1941.
And his parents, what was the date of their arrival early in the year?
Also in 41, I think in the beginning of 41, I can't remember. There was a wonderful story to that too. They arrived in New York. We were settled in Pittsburgh when we knew the date of their arrival in New York, and we wanted to be at the pier. And my husband mentioned it to his employers. We were very poor. He only had $62 a week. And we couldn't really afford the trip to New York. And my husband mentioned it to his employer, who was a Gentile, and Mr. Sproul was... His two sons are an accounting family. And Mr. Sproul Sr. says, oh, by the way, my wife has to go to New York. What date did you say? He knew exactly the date. We'll drive there anyway. We take you along. And that was a made-up story.
How wonderful.
And they drove us to New York. And we welcomed. By that time, my parents were there already. And in a horrible apartment that we were able to supply for them on 103rd Street. You know what that is. And it was still different in the 40s. And they helped him along. My mother, may she rest in peace, supplied my father-in-law, may he rest in peace, with his first work.
What was that?
There was a chocolate company, the precursor of Barton's, by the name of BBB. I don't know if you remember the three B's. German immigrants who established a chocolate factory with excellent special merchandise. My mother went, bought a little suitcase, went to that factory and bought, you had to buy your samples, one of each, packed a suitcase full for my father-in-law and said, here, Louis, you go from door to door with the suitcase. You go to the coffee houses and sell these things. And he started making money. He made his income. My mother was a very outgoing person. My mother worked and loved to work in New York. She was very handy. She knitted and crocheted in those cottage industries or whatever you call them. They made samples. They were of high taste and sold in boutiques only, samples and this. My mother enjoyed it because the co-workers were all German immigrants. It was more like a coffee house where she sat all day, but she worked very hard and she did splendid work. When my mother finally came after my father's death and settled with us in Pittsburgh, she joined the lounge, the National Council of Jewish Women's Lounge, and she had blue ribbons from for their work when they had exhibits and a gold pin and I don't know what. My parents were very active to their age.
How old were they when they came to this country?
60, 61, around that age. My parents-in-law were younger. They were a younger couple at that time.
Do you think you take after your mother?
I hope I do.
It sounds like you do.
I don't do after her physically. She was a rather tall, stately woman. My father wasn't a tall man, but I've lived through that.
Sounds like you have a lot of your mother in you.
Beg your pardon?
Sounds like you have a lot of your mother
Well,
in you.
As I say, I hope I do. Mother was very active in my father's business. She had a lot of guts when she lived with us and was alone and not in the best of health anymore, and we lived in Forest Hills. She went on that awful 87 streetcar and later on the Lincoln coach and took herself to Squirrel Hill. Discovered the bakeries here and brought us stuff home. And she was the one who took my children on Sunday morning to religious school on the road of Sholem Temple, where my husband and I were exhausted and didn't want to get up on Sunday morning. But it was my mother who did it and enjoyed life very much here. And unfortunately, she died in an accident and her life was too short for her values.
You mentioned rediscovering friends from the past after many years.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little about that?
I had a friend up through university who studied physics and made her doctorate in physics. And she was half Jewish. Her mother was Gentile, I think even a quarter. Her father was also half, so she was only a fourth. Her name was Schlesinger, the Jewish name. She was a colleague of mine at the University of Vienna, and when she had a younger brother who, strangely enough, at the age of 16, was then drafted in the German army and died at 16 at the Russian front. That's all she knows about him. She herself, at the beginning of the Nazi war, was imprisoned and taken to the infamous prison in Berlin, underground prison in Berlin, by the name of Alexanderplatz. Spent the war years there. And when the war ended, she walked from Berlin to Vienna to find her mother alone. Her father had died and her brother had perished in the army in Russia. She couldn't find a position there, and they were starving in Vienna, actually starving after the war, 1945. My brother-in-law, who at that time was director of the German Department of the Voice of America, went around interviewing people the way you do now, but he didn't do it for history as much as for the present, to beam to the European countries. He interviewed me. I was active in Forest Hills in the establishment of a kindergarten, which at that time didn't exist, and my children needed it. And I told about my background and short the wait in here and the needs. And those tapes were beamed over Europe. And this friend of mine listened underground to that tape and found out that I lived and where I lived and contacted me and let me know that that she was alive. Shortly thereafter, my brother-in-law was transferred to the Nuremberg trial as instantaneous translator and had an army address. So I told him to contact my friend and sent packages to his address within Germany from Nuremberg to Vienna. He was allowed to send postal packages. We couldn't. And I sent her the first food she really had, a pound of shortening, a pound of coffee, a pound of flour, a pound of sugar. And that's how we found each other. She had become a librarian because for physics and technical professions there was no room immediately after the war. She had become a public librarian, and she met a lovely man whom she married, who unfortunately didn't live long. And then she rediscovered a childhood friend of hers who had lost his wife in London. And they courted each other by mail again. And they had to decide whether to live over there or here. And they finally decided for Washington. And she moved to Washington here. And she lives in, I can't think of it. Anyway, I've seen her several times. And that's one of the ones. And I also found a classmate of mine through correspondence and rumors in Australia. And another classmate had married Dr. Bettelheim, who had been her teacher in Vienna School for Social Work. And they live in California, and I visited her 2 years ago, and unfortunately she died last year, but I was in correspondence with Dr. Bettelheim.